All right, this morning, let's turn back to the 20th chapter of Luke. I just want to go back to verse 20 briefly because it's going to set us up for what's coming in terms of review. It's a remarkable verse to me, a remarkable verse on so many levels. The setup here then in verse 19, after once again he rebuked the representatives of the Sanhedrin, they wanted to lay hands on him. Now we say that's not religious, but that's an expression that's used that they wanted to find a reason to arrest him, but they couldn't find any reason. Because, first of all, they didn't have any reason to do it, and second, they were fearful of the people. And so they were persistent in trying to find something that they could use to have Jesus arrested and or killed, because we've studied clearly that the intent of these men were to have Jesus killed. It wasn't even enough to have him arrested. They wanted him dead, but they would settle for arrest if they could even get that. And so verse 20, and they watched him, which is a verb, they kept watching him, and sent forth spies which should feign themselves just men. That statement always amazes me, that they sent forth spies who disguised themselves as righteous men, that they might lay or take hold of his words so that they might deliver him unto the power and authority of the governor. So they were so desperate, this group of representatives from the Sanhedrin, they were so desperate in wanting to get Jesus killed that they sent a series of spies whose sole purpose was to constantly be watching him so that they could, in their mind, look for an opportunity in which to trap him by his words. They were liars in wait, so to speak, masking themselves to be his disciples so that whatever he says, if he says something that could be used against him by the government, Roman authorities, that's what they were banking on, because they knew that they didn't really have any power of their own to do anything to him at all. So they knew the only way that they could get him was they had to use the authorities, the Roman authorities that were there. And this group of men from the Sanhedrin, they already knew that Pilate would have to condemn Jesus if they were to put him to death. That was their intent. And as you get to the end, you'll find that's exactly what they did. But they feigned themselves just men. And we saw that the spies, or the certain of the Pharisees and the scribes, that's who they really are, according to Mark chapter 12. And so they were a combination of religious and political hypocrites who disguised themselves as disciples of Christ for the purpose of trying to get Jesus killed. And the amazing thing was that the Sanhedrin knew this was going on, the Jewish ruling authority. So these men were sent with their blessing. Not only that, but we also saw last time that the Herodians were a political party that supported a pro-Roman dynasty, which was 180 degrees opposite anything that had to do with Judaism. I mean, there was no commonality between the Herodians and the Pharisees, scribes, the Sanhedrin, none of them. No common ground, except when it came to trying to get rid of Jesus. Okay, so they were willing to dismiss their hatred for each other because their hatred for Christ was even more than a hatred for one another. Amazing. And I talked about how many people in the church, and we know from experience many years many people are in churches feigning themselves to be righteous men and women, boys and girls. And the motive of them going is to really to take down the church. And they usually try to do it. I've watched both methods from the bottom up and then from the top down. And my feeling is you always go for the top first. If you're going to take everything out, start from the top, take it down. you notice these men weren't really trying to work on the disciples up. They want Jesus out. And once you take away him, everything from that point goes down. So the top is always being gunned. All right. They may infiltrate the bottom and try to divert the attention of the leadership by looking at the diversion. But that's a method, too, to take the top down. Now, these hypocrites deliberated or convened a council together and planned a scenario that they thought would place Jesus into a trap with his own word so that he could be rejected by the Jewish people and arrested by the Roman authorities. And they tried to do with paying taxes to Rome. We said paying the poll tax was the most obvious sign of submission to Rome. In AD 6, Judas of Galilee, which was mentioned, I believe, in the book of Acts by Gamaliel, the same Judas, led a revolt against the first procurator because he took a census for tax purposes. And the Jewish zealots claimed that the poll tax was a God-dishonoring badge of slavery to the pagans. So this trap was to put Jesus into the position where he would either alienate a major part of the population or else lay himself open to a charge of treason. See, for Jesus to refuse to pay taxes was a capital crime. So if they can get him to say, well, we shouldn't pay the poll tax, that's all they needed. Capital offense, you don't want to pay taxes, you die. Especially someone with Jesus's leadership qualities. He would be perceived as a leader of a revolt. We got to get rid of him. And so here these men, feigning themselves to be righteous, they start to set off this plan. And the first thing they do is that they try to get Jesus flattered. Okay, they want to flatter him. So the first thing they start doing is verse 21, Master, we know that thou sayest and teachest rightly, neither acceptest thou the person of any, but teachest the way of God truly. That's all flattery. Now, what they said was true. Okay, don't get me wrong. What they said was true and accurate about the Lord, but their intent, okay, the intention of these men was to flatter the Lord, to trap him. Okay. Many fail to recognize the hypocrisy of flattery and allow their heads to become rather puffed up, and therefore they fall right into the trap of the enemy. The first word they said was master, which means teacher. So they recognize him as a teacher, and they probably recognize him, at least in this case, as a chief teacher, because you wouldn't call someone the master who was not a chief teacher. So outwardly, they're saying, well, you know, you're a chief teacher, no doubt. You have tremendous teaching skills, et cetera, et cetera. Then they say, we know that thou sayest and teach rightly. In other words, we know or regard you as a true or loving the truth and a truthful man. In other words, they were saying he was a straight truth teacher. You know, he's a straight shooter. So they are acknowledging that. Man, you teach that truth right. Yeah, well, why aren't you following it then? This is usually the question. If what you're saying is true, then why aren't you following it? Neither acceptest thou the person of any. It's not that Jesus didn't care for mankind. What they're saying is that Jesus shows no favoritism. And that's the mark of a genuine teacher. You don't show partiality, because one of the things that God demanded in the Old Testament of those who were going to be his servants to the people is that they had to be a reflection of his character. Okay, so God is not partial. And as a teacher, pastor, preacher, whatever, you can't be partial. No matter how much your heart may tug at that, your ministry is not your ministry. Okay, your ministry is God's ministry. So you have to make sure that when people are listening and watching you, that they see the Lord. They don't see you. That's why truth has to be spoken without regard to how the hearer is going to respond to it, because that's not my responsibility or any man of God's responsibility. The hearers need to understand they just heard from the Lord. They didn't hear from Harley. They didn't hear from somebody else. They need to understand that God is not partial, And so therefore, we can't reflect the partiality in our teaching. And I know in this age, that's way out of season because everyone is being pampered in their teachings. And if you don't pamper them, they take their Bible, their liberal Bible, and go home. They take their, what Dr. Elaine Mistrauss used to call their perversion of the Bible, and go home. Well, go home. Everyone who came here knew what they were getting themselves into. It's almost like you tell them, okay, here's a prerequisite. You're going to get the truth. Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Okay, just want you to know that. So we all get it. We all get it. No different. Can't be partial. They didn't believe it, of course, what they were saying about the Lord. He says, or they say, but teach us the way of God truly. In other words, you are a teacher of the way to God and of God concerning or according to truth. So you are a teacher which teaches people in the right way to get to God. That's what they said about it. And they didn't believe any of it. It was all flattery. It was all a lie. They didn't believe a single word of it. They said he was completely truthful and accurate about the way to God. Didn't believe it. They said all the right words about the Lord, but they believed not one bit of it, because if they did, they would have followed him as his disciples. It is, as one writer said, quoting, thus their statements, though actually true of Jesus, covered bitter hatred. Their kind words were as deceitful in their purpose as a kiss of Judas. Now, the interesting thing about the Lord in comparison to us is that the Lord could not be moved with flattery, but we can. Because when I look at the Bible and it gives instructions about flattery, the instruction is never to God, it's to us. Okay, so I'm going to take some time. We're going to talk about that because it's important for us to understand that flattery is a trap. It really is. Because if we're not careful, we're not prayerful, we could be fooled by flattery. And not only careful and prayerful, but filled with and walking in the Spirit and the Word of Christ dwelling in us richly, we could fall to the flattery of others. It doesn't matter who or whom or what is saying what, and we could all be set up for the big takedown. Proverbs 26. Let's turn there. Proverbs 26. I'm going to look at three verses in this 26th chapter and one verse in the 29th chapter, because we need to see that, and I've experienced, we all have. In this room, we all have experienced flattery, but more specifically, the motive behind it and the deceitful nature of the one who is flattering us. I think it's fair to say we all have experienced that to some degree or another. So we're going to look at just briefly the real motive behind flattery in the Old Testament, and then we're going to see exactly how it ties into this. Verse 24, he that hateth dissembleth with his lips and layeth up deceit within him. When he speaketh fair, believe him not, for there are seven abominations in his heart. And verse 28 says, a lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it, and a flattering mouth worketh ruin. Let's go back to verse 24. He that hateth dissembleth with his lips and layeth up deceit within him. So we're talking about someone who has hatred in their heart for people or an individual, whatever. And the word dissembleth means they pretend. They pretend to be your friend. They pretend to really like you. But it's a cloak to disguise the true nature of their own heart. They really don't care about you at all. The person waits for the right opportunity to express their hatred. The person really within is malicious and planning deceit, disguising it with smooth words. Verse 25, when he speaketh fair, or when he speaketh graciously, do not believe him. like the simplicity of Solomon. He says, if you see this kind of person, and you see it, and you hear what they're saying, and you know it, you don't believe them. Anything they say. Now, I've worked around these kinds of people, and I'm telling you, I don't believe a word they say. They can tell me that the sky is above my head, as I say all the time, and the ground beneath my feet, and I wouldn't believe them. I'd have to have a second opinion, because I don't trust theirs. That's the kind of people we have to deal with. And he says, if you see this kind of person and they speak graciously, don't believe anything they tell you. Do not place your trust or confidence in them. Don't agree with them. What they say outwardly is not in any way what is on the inside of them. Don't believe them. He says, there are seven abominations in his heart. In other words, their heart is filled with detestable thoughts and motives and agendas and behavior. Don't believe them. If you and I run into these kinds of people, at any time they're going, let me think about, don't believe them. Prayer is no substitute for action. When it's time to do something, we do it. In this case, you don't believe this person. Verse 28, a lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it. So a person that lies to you is a person that hates you. That's why I detest lying. I don't want to be around people that lie. Because really, they hate you. They don't care about you. I don't trust liars. I don't trust them. I had to tell someone in this park, I don't trust you because you lie too much. And I don't want to be around you. You know, I've told people, I don't trust you. If you lie to me, don't come near me. Because I don't trust liars. I put no confidence in someone who lies. And you get one shot lying with me. You don't get a second chance. Because I don't want people around me that lie. Because I know you don't care for me. They desire to harm others by slandering their reputations. Most of them use flattery to achieve their hateful schemes. It says, by a flattering mouth worketh ruin. So with a flattering mouth, they want to destroy a person. You want those kinds of people around you? I don't want them around me. Do you think I want to trust what they tell me? No. You might be perceived as insensitive. I can live with that. I have a problem with that. I'll let them ruin your life, and you come back and tell me how you feel about it. It's not a question of perception. It's a question of truth. We all live in a world right now where there's a lot more emphasis on perception than reality. You know, when we grew up, you used to have to study history, real history. Okay. You have to research. You have to go to the library. You have to pull out books. And there were those men and women who were very credible in terms of their research and studies. And they would have the bibliographies and you would see their credible studies and what have you. That's then. I'm surprised any libraries exist, and I know some of them have shut down. Now we can redact history. We can redact it so much where if Oliver Stone wants to redact history, he can just make JFK. Complete fabricational nonsense. The whole thing, complete nonsense. But people believe it as true. Why? Because they see it on the screen. Because it seemed credible. Everything a lot of these people, you know, put on the screen is just all to be, it's all propaganda. It's all designed to rewrite history. One of my favorite movies when I was a teenager, favorite movies of all time was Patton. I loved that movie. George C. Scott was amazing. The whole thing was a bunch of nonsense. You know, when you study the real history, much of that was completely made up. And I believed it as a kid because it was on a screen and Patton was bigger than life. A lot of stuff in that movie was complete fabrication. When they say based on a true story, don't believe a word of it because that doesn't mean anything anymore. It doesn't mean anything anymore. So history is all redacted. If you can put up on the screen and in the age where everyone's doing this, I get so tired of seeing people doing this all the time. I'm talking to you. Do you hear me? Hold on. You do that, you know. They're texting now. You can't talk anymore like a human being. You gotta sit there and get mad and, you know, get carpal tunnel from all that texting. You've seen people probably come your press, their hands all like that all the time. But history gets redacted, and we're being deceived with our eyes wide open about it. I'd be careful about this stuff. Have to be careful about flattery. You got to be very careful about everything. The motive of the flatterer is to destroy someone's life, is not to help them. So someone is out there saying wonderful things about you, put up just a little flag first. Say, wait, let's see what this is all about. Put up that little red flag and just at least be cautious and fly the flag low. Just be cautious with what you hear, what you see. Because you never really know yet. Proverbs 29:5. A man that flattereth his neighbor spreadeth a net for his feet. You know, you ever seen the Bible? Nothing is ever commended about flattery. I never found a single word that was commended. Not a single verse commends flattery. But it always condemns it. I never found a single verse that commended hypocrisy. It always condemns it. I never found a single verse that ever commended unbelief, but always condemns it. I never found a single verse that ever commended lying. In fact, the book of Revelation teaches that all liars shall have their part in the lake of fire, brimstone that burn forever. And people lie like they breathe in this culture. And they're not afraid of the afterlife. They're not afraid of what's coming. A person who uses flattery attempts to seduce his friend into a trap. Constant warnings in both the Psalms and the Proverbs about the sin of flattery. Never commended in the Bible. Never. Truth is, righteousness is, integrity is, honesty, love. These are all commended. Flattery is a trap. It's a trap. There's nothing good about it. Nothing good in here about it. And this is important. Okay, above everything else, you know, I use flattery to good. Is it true in here? We're supposed to be living by the book. Is it true in here? Do you see any of it being commended by God in here? No. Maybe we should take heed to it. So all this flattery was laid upon the Lord as if they could trap him by flattery, knock him off his game, so to speak. Back to Luke 20. And so after all this long preamble, as one writer called it, here comes the real trap. Is it lawful for us to give tribute to Caesar and Caesar or not? Should we give to Caesar or should we not? They thought they had him. Again. They thought they had him. It was a meaningless question, of course, which was spawned from meaninglessness or meaningless hypocritical praise of the one they absolutely hated. So the setup was complete, and they came in for the kill. They thought they had him. And this is all done publicly for the purpose of discrediting the man so that they can discredit the message. They discredit the man, they can discredit the ministry. That's the whole intent. Take out the head. Everything he does is meaningless at this point. So that's the motive. That's the motto. Take out the head. Everything he says or does is meaningless. So they cloaked their hatred of Christ in their alleged request of his opinion about the payment of taxes. And it was an opinion. And you got to be careful because sometimes a hypocrite wants to know what your opinion is. You better be careful about giving your opinion because you don't know what they're going to do with that information. Everything you say can and will be used against you. Everything that you say to people. So they want, well, what do you think about this? My question is, why do you want to know? I think I'm moving on to the next person. Yeah, that's a good idea. What do you want to know? What do you plan to do with the information? Who are you going to take it to? If you're a believer, people ain't going to like us. They want you and I out of the picture. Listen, if we have any credibility at all to anybody, the devil is gunning for us 24/7. And sometimes we let our guard down. We think the most simple, they're not going to do that. That's the time you're going to get got. When you think the devil's not out there to take you out, that's the time you get taken out. We have to always be on guard, always vigilant. Even if it seems like sometimes we drive ourselves nuts. Is there ever a break? Yes, heaven, that's the break. While you're on earth, stay vigilant all the time. Because you never know. You never know. That means you're a suspect. Yes. Admittedly. You know, I'll go back to something you were saying earlier. You know, as many times my heart been beat up, I got to be suspicious of just about everybody. I've been crushed, beat, battered, and stomped on. And all those people I've trusted. Those are people I trusted. Okay. I'm already suspicious of ones who I don't know. But when the ones that you give your life to does it, you have to be. You're almost forced to be suspicious of what people say. Not that you want to be, but that you have to be. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to keep trusting because that's who I have to be. I can't be bitter about what people, I can't. If you're bitter, they win. You lose. You lose. These people have already gone on. They lived. They're not even thinking about you. And then we don't want to live our life as if they're thinking about us all the time. I don't care what they think about us or you or me. This is our life. We get to live our life for God. We can't afford to let our own bitterness do to us what they couldn't do to us. Take us out. Let this stuff go. It ain't worth it. It's not worth it. And I know, and we all know to some degree, some greater than others. We all know the bitterness that can happen. Let it go. If it flares up, recognize it, let it go. Because it always pops up. Something you do reminds you of the person, right? So I go through it too. Something you see, something somebody said, and here it comes. Let it go. I'm no Superman. I go through the same struggles everybody else goes through every single day. And we always have to come to a place we have to let stuff go. And you'll be surprised that it becomes less and less and less. And then you want, well, what happened to something? Well, that's already done. You let it go. Okay, well, move on to something else. Bitterness is easy. Especially when you know you're right and you've been hurt. And I understand it. You've done nothing but help and love people. You get hurt. You know what? That's the nature of this life. That's the nature of this life. And as much as I wish for something different, it's just not going to happen. If after 32 years, nothing's changed, another 32 ain't going to make no difference. Especially now, it's going to get worse. But we have to be what we need to be to give these people an example. Even if that means we get hurt again, welcome to real life. It's just going to happen. You just keep loving them anyway. It's nothing you can do except quit. Be bitter. Why? Don't you want to win? Every day I get up, I have to decide whether I want to win or lose. I don't get up, I'm this mighty man. I have to decide whether I want to win or lose today. Whether I'm going to be depressed because of my current state or whether I'm going to just plow through. You plow through. You keep going. You keep fighting. You keep loving. You don't quit. It's easy to quit. It's easy. Anyone quits. No, don't take no strength for that. I don't know how I got way over there, but I'm glad I did. So now I got to find a way to get all back over here. Beware of flattery. I lost the chain of thought, but I'm kind of glad I got where I was at. Beware of flattery. Because we don't want to be undone by our own words. I know where I'm at. We're all going to suffer. We're all going to get, you know, we're all going to go through it. You can try to protect your life, but why? It's not going to work. I've tried it. It ain't work. Because I'm a trusting individual. And some say, you can't trust. I know I can't trust, but I'm going to do it anyway because I have to. It's the nature of who I am. Because if I don't, the alternative is going to destroy me. And I can't allow that. Because if I destroy myself, then nothing I do has any meaning. I'd rather be hurt than be bitter. Because if I'm hurt, I can learn and grow from the hurt. If I'm bitter, I shut all learning down. I'm worthless. Now, they say, well, master, teacher, is it lawful or right for us to give tribute or taxes to Caesar or not? And so they tried to force the issue to give an immediate answer. Answer us now. All these people around him. What's he going to say? Why was this an issue? First of all, or better, why was it a trap to the Lord? Well, first of all, there were three taxes at least collected by Rome. First is land or property tax. Okay. Then you had toll taxes in important cities, pretty much like we have in our culture, and all cultures have these kinds of taxes. And you have poll tax. And that's really the third, that tax is the one that they're questioning here, a poll tax. If you paid a poll tax in Rome, you were actually admitting a submission to Caesar, okay, and subjection to Caesar, who considered himself to be a god. So if you were going to pay the poll tax, you were submitting to a man who claimed to be a god. Of course, that means that the Jews didn't honor Caesar, but they despised him, so they say, and considered themselves free from his bondage, which is absurd because they were under his dominion, which makes sense. We're not subject to any man. Yes, you were. Again, keep in mind that both representatives of the Jews and Romans were present at the dialogue, and if Jesus were to affirm one against the other, or if he were to side with paying taxes, he would be immediately spurned by his own people as a collaborator of the Romans. If he were to say, yeah, pay the poll tax, immediately he'd be discredited by his own people. They would see him as a collaborator of Rome, and they had plenty in that day, and they would go, forget it. Discredit forever. Okay. If he was to say, don't pay the taxes, then he'd be in trouble with Rome and be held under treason, especially for the poll tax. Okay, one thing not to pay land or property or toll taxes, but the poll tax was required by everybody. You didn't pay it, you were in some deep trouble. It was a trick question, which in their thinking only produced a yes or no answer. That's the trap. They thought they asked him a question which only had a yes or no answer. And most of these questions they ask him are very one-dimensional. It's either this or that. It's either this or that. The Lord always said, what about this? Oh, there you go again. You got us again. So it's very one-dimensional in how they approach the Lord. Well, they were not speaking to someone like themselves, someone who didn't have the infinite resources of wisdom and knowledge. So they're just speaking to another human. They think they're speaking to another human being who was subject to the trap of flattery and subject to the traps of deception and ignorance due to pride. But they were speaking to God the Son. And once again, he would turn the tables upon their question and he would silence them and he would embarrass them. We'll learn later. They might think they're finished asking questions, but he's going to ask them questions to embarrass them in the way they tried to embarrass him. But he perceived, verse 23, their craftiness, and said unto them, why tempt ye me? Why? Another of the gospels says, you hypocrites. I mean, he just spells them out. He knew their trickery. That craftiness means trickery. He knew it. Of course he knew it. Why are you trying to tempt me to do evil? Because this whole line of questioning was all evil intended. So he's saying, why are you doing that? He knew everything about them. And he knew that everything about them, including all their motives and their thoughts of their hearts and minds, was evil, and he exposed them. He exposed their hypocrisy. These hypocrites were so confident in their scheme, they didn't flinch. They waited for an answer. They would get an answer, but not one they expected. Show me verse 24, Penny. Whose image and superscription hath it? They answered and said, Caesar's. And he said unto them, render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things which be God's. Slap. Got him again. Oh, man, he got us again. Haven't you guys learned from previous attempts from others how this just doesn't work with the Son of God to keep trying? I give him an A for persistency. They just keep on trying over and over and over and over and over. The closer you walk with the Lord, they're going to keep coming. There are always going to be traps. There's always going to be things that are going to try to hinder you and take you out. The devil does not want you or me or anybody doing anything that's going to promote the Lord. He's doing his job. If he sends 1,000 scribes and Pharisees to affect us, they're doing their job. They're just doing what they're supposed to do. Do everything possible to take us out. Want us to quit? Want us to stop? You quit. You stop. Someone said, well, I don't want to be offensive. And, you know, if we don't really talk about Christianity because, you know, we afraid people might get offended. I don't care if people get offended. They don't mind cussing and saying filthiness before me. They don't mind offending me. They don't see me bothered by that. Am I just supposed to be quiet? I'm going to talk about Jesus whenever I want to and to whomever I want to. If you don't have any problem being offensive to me, I guess, you know, we'll turn the table. At least what I have to say has some value and merit to it that can help people, as opposed to saying the filthiness is coming out of the mouth of people that just be selfish. But the last thing you want to tell Harley Howard to do is don't do this or don't say that, especially when it pertains to the Lord, because you're talking to the wrong person. You're just going to instigate me to do it more. The best thing is, like I said, 2 weeks ago, just leave him alone. He's always going to say something, but if you aggravate him, he's going to say it more. So let him be. Don't get him started. Whose image is represented on the coin? They answered that it was Caesar's. Jesus said that since the coin bears his image, then it belongs to him in the first place. That's it. It's his coin, isn't it? Give him back what's his. The coin bore his image and superscription, therefore it was his to begin with. The coin therefore represented the power of the ruler. But what did Jesus mean when he said, and unto God the things that are God's, although there was and is an obligation to support the government by way of taxation, there is to be a far greater obligation to submit to the power and authority of God. Far greater. We're going to be taxed to half to death. What do you think? Are you suggesting that as a believer you shouldn't pay taxes? The Bible never advocates non-payment of taxes. I've challenged anyone and always have. Show me anywhere in the Bible where the Bible supports non-payment of taxes. You pay your taxes. Because if you want to drive on a crater, don't pay your taxes. Listen, I know, and I'm not stupid, and neither are you. We know that most of our money that these crooks in Washington take are being used for far more nefarious things than that which, of course, should benefit the people. We know about the slush funds, the schemes, the scams, and all this so-called TARP and all that. We all know that junk. I don't want to drive on a crater. I was in New York many years before I, you know, moved to the military, went to California, other places. And I'm telling you, during those times where New York didn't get enough taxes, enough funding, or was under tax or whatever, those highways were like the moon. Remember we went back years ago when I had that Mercury? We just driving the streets of Queens and Brooklyn. We thought we were on Mars. Big old giant massive car-sized craters. I thought the front end of my car was going to be in the street. That's what happens when you're in a city that doesn't get taxes or doesn't get enough taxes, and they can't build those roads. So yeah, I don't mind. Give it to them. And when you call 911, you don't get a recording. You know, when you want the police at your door, you have to pay them. Or if your house is on fire and you dial 911 or the fire department, you better hope. Or if you have heart problems and you can't drive and you fall and you can't get up, but you can get to a phone and, you know, here comes the paramedics. That's your tax dollars at work. Or if some nut whack job decides he wants to attack America, you want America to be able to defend herself against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That's your tax dollars at work. You see, I get it. I don't like the way the government is spending. In fact, no sane person likes the way this government is spending their money. Please, it's our money. Why in the world should we like the way they're doing with it? And giving people money to coerce them to vote for more Democrats and whatnot. It's ridiculous. I mean, listen, we all can't just be stupid and close our eyes and act like these things ain't going on and start saying praise the Lord. Okay, this is reality check. Okay, we can praise the Lord and tell the truth. And this whole thing is just corrupt as the day is long. But the fathers had it right, that the kinds of people that we elect in government, there's no need to complain about it because we put them there. They're only a reflection of us. If you keep voting the same moron in every 4, 2, 4, 6 years and complaining about them, why don't you vote for somebody else? And stop trying to blame Bush. Bush is gone. It's ridiculous. Keep blaming Bush for everything. This is nonsense here. Just stop doing it. Pay your taxes. Bam. You get write-offs, write them off, but pay your taxes. You go to the store, you're going to pay taxes. You can't, well, I'm a conscientious objector. I can't pay. Security, you want that food, you better pay that sales tax. You want to buy a car, you want to buy it, you got to pay the tax. End of the year, you pay tax all year, you get paid at the end of the year. That's where we're at. You want to move to Nevada? Move to Nevada. I don't want to move to Nevada. Pay your taxes. Nowhere in the Bible is there any of this revolt. I hear professing belief revolting against paying taxes. And I find it interesting they never open the Bible when they do it. You can't. Where's it at? Even Jesus told Peter, go down to the sea and cast a line and the first fish you get, he'll have the coin in his mouth and then pay your taxes for both of us. Yes, I know what he said before that. The children are free. Nevertheless, lest we should offend them. Pay your taxes. And pay mine too. The Lord paid taxes. Why can't we pay them? He paid taxes to a government that was going to kill him. And did. So if he did it, what's our complaint? So I just want you to know. And I usually do this when I'm in Romans. You know, I was in Romans 13. I made a big deal about it because people always want to know, what does Harley think? What do you mean? It's not important what I think, but what the Bible says. Pay your taxes and be quiet. But above that, there's an obligation to God, which is infinitely more important. Infinitely more important. And where is the drive for that representation? To give to God what's his. To submit to his power and authority. As the coin was a signage of submission to the power and authority of a man, why is it our lives are not submitted to the power and authority of God who made us? This whole world bears his representation. We all do. We're his creation. Why don't we submit to him with greater zeal rather than paying some taxes? People make a big deal about whose face is on a coin. They do it today. Oh, don't get this dollar. It doesn't have in God we trust. I told you, folk, it's not about words. In God we trust in our money. I don't care if it's on the money or not on the money. I care if it's in our walk. Don't we get it? This isn't about symbolism. It's not about symbolism. It's about reality, and we live on the symbol and throw the reality away. Been crying this for years. We don't have, they're removing all the vestiges of everything from every, take it down. It doesn't represent who they are anyway. If anything, they should take it all down so we can really see what they're about. Nothing. They don't represent God. It's a blasphemy to be sitting for these Republicans and Democrats, independents and whomever, to sit in place of authority with symbols of what represents the Lord when they hate him. Take it all down. I don't care. Where's the church? We're the ones that are supposed to be representing God. Where is his image and superscription upon us? I'm like, does anybody even hear anything? We worried about, I get emails, thousands, but, oh, don't buy the, don't get the dollar. Is that what we've come to? Have we become so shallow that we worry about coinage and not the reality of where we need to be in our own walk? I'm absolutely stunned at how the church is becoming a caricature of itself. The world looks at us as a bunch of nut jobs. You know why? Because that's what we become. Whose image and superscription is on our life? That's important. Not whether we should get the new dollar coin, which looks like a token anyway. I had a token. What is this? This is junk. It's ugly. Like the Susan B. Anthony was ugly. What is this? A token? A gimmick? I don't know what it was. Give me a paper dollar. That's just as worthless. But at least I know that. What is this? What is this? I didn't ask for a bunch of. That's not a quarter. That's a dollar. Give me some paper. What's this nonsense? Nothing but a token. I probably throw that out the window, thinking it was a token or something. Give it to some kid here. Amazing. In like manner, Christ, who Paul stated in Colossians 1:15, who is the image of the invisible God, this is the same word image, is the same word image that's used here in Luke 20, that Christ is the image of the invisible God, firstborn of every creature. Christ represents the true power of God and therefore was to be obeyed in all that he commanded of the nation of Israel and the church too, for that matter. Therefore, to properly render to God the things that are God's, one must give him or herself over in subjection to God through Christ, thus revealing one's obligation to God. That's what this is all about. Whose image and superscription is on our life? That's the question. There is an obligation to Caesar and to God. The coinage that bore Caesar's image was his because he made it. And he did. Therefore, one was obligated to him. All of mankind belongs to God because he is our creator. And since that be true, then we are obligated to give ourselves to him. And that can only happen through Christ. Masterful answer. Really was. Period. And again, as I said earlier, in Matthew 17, the issue of the temple tax. Jesus and his disciples were exempt, but Jesus made it clear that they did not want to be an offense to the people. And Peter was to obtain the tax money through another of Jesus' miracles, to pay the taxes for both of them. Why were they exempt? Because Christ is greater than the temple. He's the King of Kings and Lord of Lords and is under no obligation whatsoever to pay any tax because of who he is. And since that was true for himself, and that would be also true of his disciples. However, Jesus paid the taxes in Matthew 17. And in both Matthew 17 and in this chapter, Jesus never advocated the non-payment of taxes for any reason. Verse 26, and they could not take hold of his words before the people. Trapped again. And they marveled at his answer, but they held their peace. None they could say. These crack students had suffered a humiliating disgrace. and we're not able to make a case for the surrender of Jesus to Pilate. Not again. He got us again. And another group right after that is going to try the same thing. Okay. The Sadducees are going to try. And then after that, the scribes are going to try. They just keep on coming. And they keep getting slapped. And they keep getting silenced, but they keep coming. The enemy doesn't stop coming. If the enemy has a mission and a goal to take you out, they will keep coming until the goal is accomplished. The closer you get to the Lord, the more the enemy is going to come. He wants you out. If you're effective, he wants you out. Jesus had slipped through their net with the utmost ease. They looked foolish before the people as they were mesmerized by the answer of the Lord. Again, notice their motives. They tried before the people to trap him in his words. They wanted to discredit him before the people and to use the people as a witness against the Lord to try him before the Roman government. Thereby, they would accomplish both goals of discrediting him before the people, thus eliminating all of his ministry and being arrested by Rome. So, as to remove him so that the ruling religious bondage would continue. That was their goal. Let's just keep this religious tradition bondage going. We have to remove everything that's going to hinder our little gimmick, our little scheme, our little plan. And all these, I said it before and I'll keep saying it, every major ministry is corrupt. Every one of them. I know what I'm talking about. They're all corrupted. From the top down. And even the ones that started off real good, every one of them. See, people watch and I say, well, who is this guy? He just sits there, stands or whatever, and he's just talking. You don't know what I know. You don't know where I've been. You don't know who I knew. All you see is what you see now, but you don't know those days in the 80s with nightlight radio. I was right there with them. And I had their representatives from these crack churches, these big churches. They were knocking on the door to come on my program. And I let them on it because I told them, hey, I'm thinking, hey, we're fellowshipping together. We're getting the word out. I was so young and naive in those days. And they said, Harley, come here. You don't need these people. I said, it's not a question. I just want to have fellowship with the saints. So Harley, you don't get it. And I had to call 1 year later and said, you were right. And I was wrong. He said, they never really cared about me. It was all to promote them. And they knew I had the number one program. They just wanted to get. It was all just a way of being used. So young, so idealistic, so naive to reality. I know about all these ministries. Every last one of them, they're all corrupt from the top down. All the major ministries, you can name any one of them, they're all corrupted. They didn't start out corrupt, but to continue to do what they're doing required massive amounts of money. And that's where the corruption begins. If they need 1 million, 2, 3, 4 million, they're going to get corrupted because they know that the local churches can't raise that kind of money. They can't do it. You can't build a college, a seminary, a television program. See, all our TV programs are free. Ain't nowhere in the world I could raise no money to put on television. To have that kind of money, you got to be corrupt. Now, I'm telling you what I know, not what someone told me. They're corrupt from the top down. They have to compromise at some level. And the more I say it, the more I hear from certain people. I'm not afraid of people. It's all corrupted from the top down. That's one of the reasons I think God just, one of the blessings of the economic turn is that you get to watch some of these so-called ministries. You get to see them unflailing and how they blame the congregants. Many of them blame the congregants for them not getting what they need. Well, you don't want to put all the money. What are you talking about? The congregants are broke. We got to keep the image going because you had all these guys say, the Lord bless this ministry because we got this, that, and we're building a bigger this and bigger that. Uh-oh, economic downturn. How do we turn this around? I got it. Let's blame the people. Let's keep blaming the people for the reason why we can't build this wing or this thing here, this building devoted to this person. So it's not a question of, you know, we need to stop building, and we see it, we have a clear vision that economically things are not going the right direction. We need to have funding in reserve so we can continue the things that do matter in this so-called ministry, that being the presentation of the gospel and those men and women who are devoted to teaching the word of God. We need to make sure they stay secure. We don't need to be building huge, giant monuments more and more and more, unending and unceasing. So they built them. So who has the money now? Of course we know who has the money now. The people have been taking it from us. So now if you want to keep building that wing, you're going to have to get in bed with your government. And that's what they do. And they've been doing it for years. And I've criticized them way back in the 90s when they were doing it. I said, what's this? This is wrong. And that's when your friends start leaving you. So-called friends. That's when they isolate you and then they marginalize you. You're nothing when you start telling the truth. But you know, if you're going to be doing what you do, you're going to be marginalized. You ready for it? Because it's going to happen. Or do you want to be where everyone is happy and what have you? Do you want to really grow in the truth? Because that's the only thing going to sustain anybody in this age is truth. Because if you don't have truth, you have you. And if you have you, there's a million places out there that'll help you, enhance you. And it'll be all about you and not about the Lord. And I don't want to be anywhere where it's all about me, because I know me and me ain't good. If left me to me, you wouldn't be in the same, like McGee, you wouldn't be in the same building that I was in. If everything was left to me, that's why I'm glad I'm saved and sanctified. And yes, filled with the Holy Ghost, and it's not some Church of God in Christ statement, it's the truth. Because if my life was left up to me, you wouldn't be in the same room with me. I wouldn't be in the same room with me, and I know me. It's all about Christ. And if it's not about him, I don't want no part of it. I don't want no part of it. I'm so tired of the church. The church as a whole right now is almost disgusting. And I'll say it again, as I said it many times in closing, if it wasn't for the fact I knew it was a Christian, I'd have left church a long time ago. And I don't blame people for leaving the church. I see what the church has been doing to people. I understand it. I not only understand it intellectually, I understand it personally. And I can see why some people are disgusted at the church, the way she treats her members, the way she treats the world. It is disgusting. And I'm telling you, a lot of it's because a lot of the churches aren't saved themselves. That's why they can do what they're doing. That's how they can mistreat and hurt people like that. They're not saved. You can't manifest Christ and destroy people's lives like that. You can't do it. You can't. It's just not possible. It's not possible. Sad to say we do it anyway. Sad to say. No, I think I ranted long enough today. Tonight we'll rant a little bit more. Lord, thank you again for teaching us your word. Pray that the application is sound, that our lives would be sound because of it. We will grow even more so, Lord. Thank you again for the privilege that you give us to be able to be together at all. And those watching and listening, Lord, through the various means, whether TV or the web, I pray that their lives would be enhanced as well, Lord. We would all grow. Pray that you'll bless the giving today in Jesus' name. Amen.